Chuck.
I know that grunt. Yeah, that's the number seven, right? Skeptical with a side of cynicism. Just clearing my throat.
Here at Buy More, we believe that the chain of command is only as strong as its weakest link.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to a special Chuck Show. I am your host, The J-Strom. Today, we are doing something different. Different than I've done before. This isn't a Chuck series companion episode. On this show, we are going to talk to a new Chuck fan. Someone who has recently binge-watched all five seasons of Chuck on Netflix and become a fan of the show, has fallen in love with the show, and it's exciting. We're going to talk to Ross today, and I'm really excited to talk about all the things about the series that he thinks. Being a fan of Chuck, I've known that I've loved it for a long time. It's kind of thing where it's hard to share with people who don't watch it. It's going to be really fun to talk to Ross about what he loved about the show and what made him keep going when that first moment he realized he loved the show, etc. So let's get this underway. And I just want to warn people, if you have not finished the series Chuck, which I mean all 91 episodes, you've watched all five seasons, you probably don't want to listen to this because we were going to be very spoiler heavy. So save this show to listen to once you finish Chuck. You will be happier for it. Save all the surprises and twists and turns for the show. Don't let us spoil anything because it's so much better that way. All right, without further ado, let's introduce Ross.
Here at the Buy More, we believe in leading by example.
Hello.
Ross, hey!
I'm here. This is amazing.
The elusive Ross.
It's true. It is. I have to say, this is an honor, and it's been a long time coming.
Well, thanks for being available.
I was able to just carve out a little time for you, you know, in my amazing jet setter lifestyle. We were able to make it work.
Well, so I appreciate that very much.
I have to say, I am a bit, you know, nervous because I keep putting in my mind all of these amazing guest appearances from Adam Howard and Adam Sexton over the years that I'm like, I just don't know if I can live up to that standard, you know?
Well, as they always say, just be yourself.
Well, I'll try.
That's the best advice I can give.
I'm going to try to make myself a lot cooler than I actually am. You know, I wanted to have an assistant jack me in to you know, like, but like, I couldn't make it work.
Please hold. He's on the line.
Yeah, we're going to patch you through right now to Ross. I wanted that to happen. I just want to be more impressive than I actually
am.
When
your phone rings, please answer it.
Exactly. So how are you, Jason?
I'm good. I'm doing really good.
That's amazing. So what I wanted to say to you, though, was, you know, because we're here for Chuck, is that my entire listening of Nowhere in Mulberry and now Entertainment Landfill, I always marveled at your ability to sit through a lot of really mind-numbing content, like, you know, Heroes and Smallville towards the end there, and, you know, Seducing Cindy, which were amazing and fun shows. But I was like, man, he has the ability to take some punishment. And now I realize that you had Chuck to fall back on. It was like your hidden little oasis.
Yes.
In the midst of all that stuff. It's like the cell phone that you have hidden in prison that,
yeah,
doesn't work, but you're thinking maybe one day I'll be able to charge it, and you keep going over to it, and it's just like this little ray of hope. That's what Chuck is.
It's, yeah, a lifeline.
It is, yes, exactly. And I have to say, I know you hid it for yourself, but I'm so happy that you, I guess, for lack of a better term, came out of the closet as a Chuck fan. Because this is awesome. I love the show so much, and I never would have, you know, gotten into it at all if it hadn't been for you. So thank,
yeah,
you.
Oh, you're welcome. You know,
yeah,
I've kind of joked with Adam Sexton that I felt like Leon in the Professional. Have you seen that film?
Yeah, of course.
The part where he's watching Singing in the Rain, and he's like smiling, and he looks around for the empty theater like, is anyone else enjoying this as much as I am?
That's a perfect analogy, yeah.
That's always the way I felt with Chuck. Like, I'd be, you know, I still even watch it now, and I'll laugh out loud and kind of look around the empty living room, and like, nobody's here.
You know, it's weird because I kind of feel like watching this, I'm like, this show is like, it's ticking all of the boxes that I want from a show. You know what,
right,
I'm saying? Going into,
yes,
a show, I want it to be fun. I want it to be funny. I want to have characters that I love. I want them to get into a little bit of danger, but it always gets worked out in the end.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't know if it's going to get worked out in the end. That's what I want from all these shows. And I guess the majority of people don't want that. I don't know what they want. But this show had it all for me. I mean, it had everything that I'm really looking for in a television show. And it's just, but it's weird because I can kind of understand how some people wouldn't like it, because maybe they just, it's not in there. They're just not funny enough people. They just don't have enough joy, I guess. That's the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. There's, some people, maybe watch with a cynical eye, and they're just like, that's stupid or something like that. But it's almost like, you know, I'll always say that I'm a Chuck apologist, meaning I find no fault in anything. I have no critical response. Like, I'm not like, oh, well, that was stupid. I just don't feel that way while watching the show. I honestly don't. So
yeah,
if I read somebody's comments that like that, I'm like immediately like, I don't need to see that, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, it's funny what you're talking about because you've said on the show the idea of being defensive about Chuck when people make comments about it. And it's like all the comments that you read about it are like, well, you're just not getting it. You're just not smart enough to get what the show's doing. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because
it's like, if it works for you, then the show is for you then, because you get it.
Yeah, exactly.
But if you don't, the show's just not for you. It's no big deal, but.
Well, it's interesting what you're saying about, you know, nothing bothers you about the show when they go over the top. When things just happen to work out, it doesn't bother you at all.
Yeah.
And it doesn't bother me at all. And I kind of need to qualify myself on this in that, for the past 2 years, I've been an avid Young and the Restless watcher with my wife, right? Which is, it's like, I know it's very embarrassing. People are like, it's your guilty pleasure, right? And I'm like, no, it's not. It's not. I don't feel guilty about it at all. But what it was is that she liked the show, and I was like, okay, I like it. You know, I want to do something that she likes. I want to be involved in something she's interested in. So I'm just going to start watching it too. And I got completely sucked into it. And now I love the show. But my threshold for like for things just working out, or ridiculous stuff happening, or people just not necessarily acting the way they would in real life is so low that Chuck is like a masterpiece to me. It's like Shakespeare. It's so well written compared to what I consume on a daily basis that I was like, there is absolutely nothing wrong with this show. It's perfect, you know?
Yeah, totally. I wanted to ask you this about when you first decided to watch Chuck, the first season, at what point did you say, okay, I love this show?
You know, it's kind of funny. I knew that you were interested in it, and Adam was telling me, you got to watch Chuck. You have to, this is Adam Howard of the Bay Area, was telling me, you have to watch it. I think you'd really like it. And so I kind of went into it knowing, you know, from two people whose opinions I respect that, okay, they think I would like this. So it was already getting a lot of favor from me. So the point that I think really, that I was really sucked in, I think was probably the second episode, because I realized that, like, okay, Adam Baldwin is going to be here for the entire time. Morgan's going to be here for the entire time. It seems like the Bymore is something that's going to play a very large role in this. And Jeff and Lester seem like they're going to have a very large role in this as well. So I think really by the second episode, I was pretty much sold on it, because it seemed to be giving me all the things that I hoped it would in the beginning, basically.
Right, right. Did you like Morgan right away too?
It's funny. You were talking about Morgan being kind of like a creeper type character. I found his character in the beginning to be funny, but I didn't think that it would last the entire run of five seasons if he was going to act like that. You can't have the best friend or the sidekick be somebody who's funny but kind of annoying. So I didn't really love his character at first, but as he started getting into, you know, Anna and they really started fleshing his character out more, I really fell in love with him.
Yeah, he definitely, that's one thing over the course of the show, is everybody has this kind of personal growth.
Yes.
Even Jeff and Lester eventually.
Yeah, exactly.
But Morgan is very immature at the beginning. But he does change over time. It becomes more responsible and stuff. And he even has great moments in that first season, like the pineapple episode is one of my
favorites. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Well, the thing is that about Morgan, it's like you look at all these characters in there and there's something that you can kind of identify with each of them. You know, I think everybody can identify with the idea of being like Chuck, of being, you know, feeling that you're special, but not necessarily living up to your potential, you know? Yeah. And for Morgan, when I was in high school, I felt like I was Morgan, because all of a sudden Adam got a girlfriend that he was spending all kinds of time with, you know, and I was the best friend who was like, well, we usually hang out all the time together, you know?
Yeah.
So I could really identify with where he was coming from when you've got this person who's very close to you, you know? And so, yeah, I really identified with his character. And as he went along, you know, he's just, you know, an awesome arc for him.
I think one thing about, you know, just doing the Chuck Series Companion podcast, one thing I knew that I wanted to do is maybe somebody will say, okay, I'll give the show a try, you know, and I'll, you know, I figured if you give it a try and it's not, yeah, it's okay, or it fizzles out, you kind of somewhere around season two, you lose interest or whatever. I'm like, okay, well, at least they tried it. But for the people like you who binge watch it and loved it, then it's worth it, you know?
Oh, yeah. Well, it's, you know, for those, because I watched it all in 3 weeks. So those like 3 weeks, my whole life, you know, aside from dealing with the family, was like, okay, well, how do I fit watching Chuck into this situation? You know what I'm saying? Like I've got stuff to do around the house. So I will I'll rock the baby to sleep. And as he's napping, I'll watch Chuck on my phone, or I'll fold clothes and do it that way. So yeah, I mean, for those 3 weeks, I was so sucked in that I don't think I once was ever like, you know, losing interest on it. I just wanted to consume the whole thing in its entirety, because I wanted to see how things ended up, turning out.
Yeah. What's interesting, like when, you know, cause I watched Chuck as it aired on NBC the first season. And then, you know, I talk about on the podcast a little bit that the writer's strike happened. So season one just kind of ends without a finale. And so you're like, oh, okay, well, I hope it's coming back or whatever. And then it did. Season two came back, which season two is fantastic. I think it has one of the best finales ever.
Yeah, it's great.
And when that finale happened, you had no idea. You assumed, because of the ratings, that Chuck wouldn't be coming back, that was the series finale probably.
Yeah.
And it was really just like, oh, God, please, you got to renew this show. Are you people assholes? What the hell? And, you know, they did. I don't know if you knew about the whole Subway sandwich campaign where fans were tweeting Subway saying, hey, I bought Subway while I'm watching Chuck tonight. So you're one of the sponsors. So people started going out in droves and buying Subway sandwiches to eat while watching Chuck. That's why there's such a Subway presence on the show. And it's so funny because Adam Sexton, who binge watched Chuck, he said, what's with all the Subway crap? And I had to explain to him that it was like a campaign by the fans to keep Chuck on the air.
That actually makes me want to go out and get Subway right now. And I don't even like Subway, but like the fact that they gave me three extra seasons of Chuck, I'll eat anything, I guess.
Dude, I cannot even tell you how many times doing rewatches, when I did the first rewatch on Blu-ray, I'm not kidding. I go, well, I'm going to go get some Subway and watch some Chuck. I started doing it. I did it. I swear, awesome. Like three times in 1 week, I went to Subway to while I was binge watching Chuck.
That's awesome. See, yeah, it's interesting what you say about season two, because even though I knew there were three seasons after that, I was still like, well, what are they going to do now? Like, it seems like this is, everything's wrapped up. Everything worked out fine.
Yeah.
And you know, I didn't really, it was just such a complete story arc through those two seasons that even though there were three seasons afterwards, I was like, gosh, it really seems like this is the place you would end it. And the whole Subway thing, I figured there was something going on, some sort of campaign going on. I didn't realize that it was fans that actually petitioned them to get going. I just thought that somebody at Subway, like the brass, was like, we got to save this show. So that's amazing that they were able to actually pull that off. And get it to extend out. What was the reception of the show? Like, what kind of ratings did it get originally?
It started off really strong in the first season. The second season, it was kind of like, remember how, because the writer strike, when it came back, it's kind of like people
were like,
the show is on the air. Okay. And the ratings were okay. It was really season two where I realized, my God, I love this show. You know, like, I freaking love the show. That after an episode like Chuck versus Tom Sawyer, I would be like, how is this not the number one show on television? I just, this is like, has everything, you know? And so I always knew it was in trouble, and I would just get annoyed. Like, you'd say, low ratings for Chuck this week, and I'd just be like, go to hell. You know, it's like, I'm watching it. What am I supposed to do? I'm curious, what is your favorite season out of the five seasons? Or do you have a favorite season?
I really think it's kind of a toss-up between season two and season four. And it's interesting because those are the two seasons where it's like they really focus on the parents. You know what I'm saying? And I think that was kind of the most compelling thing about Chuck and his sisters, you know, their whole story was the idea that they raised themselves and they kind of had to survive like that. And so finding out what the mystery was around the parents, I think really was compelling. But if I have to pick a favorite one, I think it would have to be season four. I don't think you get much TV out there now that has such an amazing storyline as the whole Volkov thing. I mean, the way that played out throughout the entire season, where it would stick with Volkov for like the first eight episodes or something like that, and then they'd go away from it, and then it would tie back in, and then it completely tied in the end. I was just like, this is really, really good writing on a show that's supposed to be funny, you know what I'm saying, like a comedy show. I think season four is probably the best. But it's really hard to top season two also, because for season two, it was when they made the shift away from being episodic to being like a procedural type show,
right,
to where there was a real long, you know, storyline throughout all the season. And I just like that from my shows more than like your CSI type, you know, one story in an hour and then you're on to the next story type thing.
Yeah, it seems like Chuck will do arcs where there will be like a standalone episode, three episode arc, and then a standalone episode while setting up another arc kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
In season four, the episode, it's Chuck versus the Push Mix, where Ellie's having the baby and Jeffster sings Push It.
Oh, yeah, they sing Push It, yeah.
Chuck proposes to Sarah while the guy's cleaning the floor. That's like one of the greatest episodes of Chuck out of the entire run, I think.
It is.
Like, I'm just beaming when it's over, you know?
Yeah, definitely. Well, I think it's kind of funny that the writer's strike happened and then it comes back and it feels like a different show in season two. Like, season one was good, but it seemed like they were able to really flesh out, like you said, the arcs. Yeah. The story arcs a little bit more while they were on strike, maybe. You know?
It's exactly what they did. There's this great interview that the creators did with Alan Sepinwall, this TV critic, where they talk about every season one at a time. And they said when the writer strike happened, they had all these ideas, but they couldn't write it because they're contractually obligated not to write. They can't. So They would just sit around talking about the show, like, we need to do this with Morgan and do this. And they basically fleshed out all of season two when they couldn't write. So they basically had it all brainstormed, you know, what they wanted to do, which I think helped in a lot of ways.
Oh, yeah, you can definitely tell because it feels like a more complete show, you know.
But I think season three has a lot of strong episodes too, like major developments also.
Season three for me was more of a slow burn. I know that for Adam Howard, that was where he kind of got bogged down. And I can kind of see that a little bit with the Shaw stuff, because Shaw is such a, like, the antithesis of Chuck. That, like, he doesn't have the personality of Chuck. He's all business. And then we spend so much time with him. I can see how some people would not really gravitate towards that season. For me, it's probably my least favorite season. I mean, that's like saying it's my least favorite slice of cake. It's still cake, and it's amazing. But it's the one that it was the most frustrating, because you have this character in Shaw who's, he's not what we're here for. We're here for Chuck. We're here for this guy's amazing character. But then when everything gets developed and you see where they were actually taking it, it was totally worth it, and it totally paid off.
Absolutely.
You know?
I think you have to go. I almost think of season three is kind of like The Empire Strikes Back, where there's a lot of bad things happening. First of all, Chuck and Sarah aren't together. She feels kind of spurned by him, and she kind of love hates Chuck, you know. She's kind of just doesn't feel good about him, you know. She basically was ready to give her heart over to him, and he kind of hurt her by choosing the spy life, you know.
Yeah.
Because he realized, I want to be a hero, you know. That's what we all would choose. Like, of course, we want to choose the girl and be a hero, but he sees an opportunity.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I want to be a hero. And that kind of spurns her a little. And so that beginning of that season, when Chuck and Sarah, not only are they not in a relationship or anything, Sarah's not really herself either, because she's kind of trying to figure things out, you know. And but I think as Shaw becomes a bad guy, the season three, like, really works, you know.
Oh yeah, definitely.
And that the season finale of season three, first of all, not even before the finale, you know, when Chuck and Sarah finally get together and that episode where they're on the train.
Yes.
That's like, that's one of my favorite episodes too. Like, when I doing a rewatch and I get to that episode again, it's just like, oh, I love this episode, you know? And all the way up until the finale where, you know, Shaw's trying to bring down the CIA and all that stuff. And Chuck's having problems with the Intersex killing his brain. And let's not even forget that Shaw kills Chuck's dad.
Yeah, I know. That's, seriously.
When it, you know, because the way the show is, it's a comedy, dramedy, or, you know, whatever, you know, we can't classify it. But when that happens, it literally is every time, like, I've said I've rewatched the show several times. Whenever I get to that point, I dread it because I feel so terrible about it. But so many great things come after that, like Ellie learning who Chuck is finally. It's like this big weight off her shoulders that Chuck doesn't have a secret anymore, because there's so much lying going on, you know?
Well, and I loved how, like, everybody that you care about on the show is eventually let into the secret, you know? Yeah. And it was so satisfying, even to the point of Jeff and Lester being let in on the secret too.
Yeah, finally.
And that scene where Lester comes around and he's just all decked out, and he's got like a, they have like a rail gun, and Jeff's got a flamethrower or whatever. It was just like, this is so awesome, you know?
Yeah.
But what you're saying about season three, I totally agree. It's they're setting up the big bad, you know, the big alpha boss, basically. Mm-hmm. And in that setting him up, it can't be happy go lucky, and it can't really have the same tone that you have when you fall in love with Chuck initially. So I can see how people would not like that shift, but it's definitely a necessary shift to make the show not get stale.
Yeah,
you know,
I think they do a great job with Shaw also. They make him like this sympathetic, his wife died, you know.
He's
a wounded, hunky, handsome secret agent, and Sarah's kind of falling for him. And you're like, no, don't fall for this guy, you know. But then it turns out Sarah is the one who killed his wife.
Yeah, seriously.
And I think that's a cool way that they kind of, that's how the ring gets them and turns them to their side, you know. I think it's really cool.
Yeah, it's definitely very motivated. I had always wondered what had happened to Brandon Routh after, like, Superman had failed. Since I didn't know about Chuck, I didn't realize that he was on here working away and being very good.
Yeah, and that's another thing, like, about the show is the actors. They did a great job with all the actors, from Zachary Levi, Yvonne Strahovski, to Adam Baldwin. Just everybody's fantastic, I think.
Well,
but
the core, like the core of actors, even up to Big Mike, are so they're just perfect. They fit their role so perfectly that it's hard for me to imagine them as anybody else in a different show. You know, I can't picture Lester being somebody else on another show, you know, but the cameos that they had from other actors were amazing too. You know,
yeah,
I mean, I think the idea of having Timothy Dalton be Volkov, it's just, you know, I love Timothy Dalton. He's probably, you know, one of my favorite Bonds. And he's just so good. You know what I'm saying?
He really is.
Just did such an amazing job as Volkov. The idea of him being the guy in the beginning who's the handler, who's so sympathetic and pathetic, and then he switches over to being Volkov, and then he switches back. You know, it's just, he did such an amazing job as him. He's probably, outside of the core people, probably my favorite actor on the show.
Oh, yeah, totally. He could be, like, goofy and then switch to menacing, like, so easily, you know?
Yeah.
I love that. Let me ask you this about different developments that happened in the show, but the one I always wonder about, like, when Emmett is killed, what did you think of that?
That was so dark. I could not believe it. I mean, I kind of was happy that it happened, you know?
Yeah.
But he was, because he was such a weasel, but I was like, dude, they just killed Emmett, like, out in the street, and then, like, they just haul his body off, and he's never heard from again. Was it a Harry Tang type situation where he got another job, or
I'm trying to remember what I think. Even Casey says to Chuck that he got a job at the same place that Harry Tang got a job. I can't remember where it is, though. I can't believe
it was a factory, a pineapple factory.
He moved to Hawaii or something like that.
Yeah.
Oahu, I think. And I love that where you see Casey, he looks at the monitor and you just see Emmett's feet, like, on the ground, and he's just like, holy crap. You know?
Yeah, definitely. Well, Emmett, that character, I mean, so creepy. You know what I'm saying? Like, you go from Harry Tang, who's like a jerk, to this guy who just seems like, you know, he's got just makes your flesh want to crawl.
You know what I'm saying?
When he comes up and says to Chuck, you know, I've got a special lady of my own, Henrietta, or whatever.
Yes,
it's
Henrietta.
Just so creepy.
She's a real, I forget what he says, but I loved about Emmett, and, you know, luckily I just kind of went over that on the podcast, is that he didn't like Chuck from the get-go. And everyone loves Chuck immediately, you know? Like, oh, he's a great guy. But he didn't like Chuck from the moment he saw him. He's like,
well, yeah, and I love the episode where they have the guy who's in there to, like, he's like, they're basically auditing Big Mike or whatever.
Yeah.
And then Emmett, like, just totally double crosses him and becomes the store manager. It's just such a great, like, devious, underhanded thing that where you get this, like, kind of cloak and dagger type thing in the Buy More, like the Buy More Politics that you would get in, you know, Chuck's Spy Life. It was awesome.
Yeah, I'll never forget when season 3 was announced, and I think I read an interview with Chris Fedak where he said that they cut our budget significantly, but we're hopefully, you know, we'll just do smaller stories, you know, or something like that, you know, season 3.
No, the Buy More stuff is the stuff that I always, I mean, I love the spy stuff, don't get me wrong, but that's the stuff that I was looking the most forward to. I was looking the most forward to Jeff and Lester being ridiculously creepy, or, you know, just seeing different ways that they could slack off.
I love that the show will have this kind of, you know, hair-raising adventure, you know, some bad guy doing something, and then it cuts to the Buy More break room, you know? It's just like, how does this have any urgency at all? It doesn't. That's what I love about it, you know?
But it always kind of somehow parallels what's going on in the spy world. But yeah, the Buy More stuff, because there's thousands of shows on television that are spy shows. You know what I'm saying? And even if Chuck is still the personable character that he is, it's the Buy More and the stuff that happens in there and those characters that make it different and make it really refreshing for me.
Yeah, I think Chris Fedak said his original idea for Chuck was, what if 24 and The Office were the same show?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
And I could see that, like, in the CTU, just the office guys in the cubicles or something. You know?
Yeah, definitely. So what was the reception like as it went along into, like, season 3, 4, and 5 when it got saved? Did the ratings pick back up a little bit, or was it
Chuck was always what you call a bubble show. It was always doing not great, but okay. And I think season 3... You know, the funny thing is, the reason I was asking about season 3 is a lot of Chucksters, as they call them, do not like season 3, or they hate early season 3. They call it the misery arc, you know?
Yeah.
And I always kind of wanted to defend season 3, like, okay, dark stuff is happening, Chuck and Sarah aren't together or whatever, but it doesn't mean it's going to stay that way. I almost think of it as like, you know, I've talked about this many times on the show, how when I first started taking Emma to movies, you know, naturally we go to a Pixar film, right?
Yeah.
And there's always a part in a Pixar film where nothing is going right. All the chips are down for our heroes. The best thing I can think of is in Up. The house catches on fire. The dogs and the mean old man take the bird away. And everything just sucks, right? And I will always remember Emma saying, I don't want to watch this anymore. I want to go home, you know?
Yeah, definitely.
And I'd have to explain to her, no. This bad stuff has to happen because it's going to get better, because the hero is going to prevail. And it's almost like, for those Chuck people, I want to say, this has to happen because everything can't go great forever, you know? You've got to have some bad things happen. And that build up to when Chuck and Sarah finally get together, there's no on again, off again with them at all. Think about it. Once they're together, they stay together.
And that was so satisfying, you know, that they didn't really play with the relationship that much. It was like you can tell that they're in love. They're going to stay in love. Yes, there's some hiccups towards the end, but it's not because they're falling out of love and they're fighting, you know, like the typical annoying type thing that you get on TV, like Friends or something like that.
They have the normal relationship stuff, how to be honest with each other, how to, you know, Sarah has to deal with being around like family, how do I unpack my things and actually live here? And, you know, a lot of adjustment has to be with her. And then Chuck has to also adjust to things too. So it's like normal relationship stuff. And I love that they stay together once that happens, you know, and you know, they're going to get married.
I can kind of see how what you were saying, going back to the idea of season 3, I could see how, if you're watching it week to week, how it would be difficult to get through the misery arc, like you're saying. It's necessary. I mean, even if you take a look at it from like the format of a screenplay, it's basically act 2. And nobody ever likes the first half of Act Two. It's when everything is falling apart, you know. But it's necessary to get to the second half of Act Two, and then the climax of Act Three. You have to have that part. But if you're watching it every week, it would be difficult to get through it, you know.
And here's a good example of watching it episodically every week was, I'll never forget the episode where Chuck starts a relationship with Hannah, and at the very end of that episode, Sarah decides to kiss Shaw, and she starts making out with him or whatever. And of course, as a viewer, you're like, no, what are you guys doing, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
There was like the Olympic break, and the show was off the air for like a month.
Oh, yeah.
And people, remember, like, I would read, like, these regular, like, write-ups of a different TV critic or whatever. You know, as I do. I'm a huge nerd. Uh-huh. But they were alluding to, and people in the comments were alluding to, like, I'm done with this show. You know, like, how can they, what are Chuck and Sarah doing with these, starting these other relationships? I don't like where this is going and stuff. And I'm like, what is going on? I don't understand, because I didn't have the same feeling because, you know, I'm a patient. I guess I'm patient. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, nobody has any trust when it comes to their television viewing.
Yeah.
You know, if it doesn't fit into exactly what you want it to fit into at that time, then everybody's like ready to just like rage quit the show. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It's but you got to have trust in these guys. You got to realize, like, Chris Fedak, he didn't forget how to write a good show. You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
You just have to trust that they're getting somewhere. And that's what was so good for me, was that, like, okay, I didn't like the fact that she was kissing Shaw. Let's see how this turns out. Let's just hop right into the next episode. And I was able to charge through the misery arc and get into the really great stuff that comes after it.
And how great is it when Chuck has to kill somebody? He has to do his red test, and then he doesn't do it. Casey does, but Sarah thinks that Chuck killed the guy. And part of her is thinking, oh my God, my heart's broken. This isn't the person I thought he was.
But it was awesome that he was willing to go there for Sarah, you know? He loved Sarah so much that he would cross that line for her. He didn't end up needing to, but he didn't know that, you know?
Yeah, and I love that Casey, there's so many times, if you think throughout the series, where he was like, when are these dumbasses going to finally just get together?
You know? His character, I mean, Adam Baldwin, I loved him on Firefly, and I loved him in, was it My Bodyguard?
Yeah.
But he's just amazing. I loved every little bit of him. I loved how he would eventually come out of his shell, but then would fight it tooth and nail, but then just kind of finally gave into it at the end. It was just such a wonderful thing. Because in the beginning, I didn't know if he was the bad guy or not. I thought that he was going to be the one that they went after, and then he was just going to be off the show. It was so refreshing for me to find out that, no, he's going to be here for the entire run. I actually went on IMDb after the first episode and looked him up to see how many episodes he did, and kind of sighed with relief when I saw that it was, you know, the whole run of the show. I know that's kind of cheating, but, you know.
No, that's good. Yeah, and how great is it that him and Morgan eventually can play off each other all the time, you know?
Yeah, the idea that they become roommates, it's
fantastic.
Good. He ended up falling in love with Morgan. You know?
Yeah, he really does. He thinks of him as a son, almost, you know? And when they, you know, introduce Casey's daughter, and then, like, Morgan likes his daughter, and then he's going to kill him and all that stuff. It's great stuff.
Well, the whole issue with his wife, or his fiance, too, is such a touching storyline. That scene where, like, she confronts him and is like, you know, you basically left me so you could become... You could work at a Buy More. And then when she finally sees that he's an NSA agent and he makes the arrest, and she actually sees, oh, okay, this is why he left. It was like vindication. It felt so good to see him have that moment.
You know what's funny is, because I haven't recorded it yet, but I just watched Chuck versus the Gravitron, which is the final Jill arc episode of season two. And it's a good example of why I love Chuck, because, you know, all this stuff is going on, but there's a part at the end where Casey is fighting the leader guy. His name is just Leader. And the guy has his gun aimed at Casey, and he goes, did you really think you could beat me? But you hear off screen, "No, but I did." He looks up, and it's Big Mike. And Big Mike just like clotheslines him. The guy flies back into a bunch of boxes. I literally go, "Yeah!" Like, you have to say it out loud, you know?
Yeah.
That's what the show does so awesome.
Yeah, definitely.
And of course, it does warmth. You know, I talk about all the time.
And so many warm, touching moments on that show. There were so many shows where I actually was like, "Oh, I'm not like this heartless person I think I am. I actually have the ability to show emotion." And Chuck is bringing that out of me. This is amazing. What is this? This is me getting choked up. Like, the whole. Like, I started getting choked up when he finds out that Orion is his dad. You know, that whole arc was amazing. The issue with his mom, just so many really awesome things in that just are so heartwarming, you know. And it's really hard. You don't get that a lot in a comedy show.
No. The one I choke up every time, I'm not kidding, every single time, and it's just the way they do it, because, you know, Chuck has been planning on proposing to Sarah in all these places, on the balcony or whatever. Remember the elaborate restaurant, and she says how that was a disaster when her parents or whatever.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah, yeah.
Like, okay, abort, abort. Like, yeah.
And the carriage has to go away, basically. Yeah, definitely.
When he proposes to her over the noise of the guy buffing the floor in the waiting room, dude, it gets me every time.
Yeah, it's so perfect. Yeah, just a perfect proposal for the two of them. You were talking about big moments, like the Big Mike thing. For me, my big yeah moment that I actually find myself going back and watching over and over again is the Jeffster Mr. Roboto at the wedding of Ellie and Awesome.
Yes, yeah.
You know, just like when they come in and he's like, this is going to be in 4/4 time. Watch me for the changes. And then it kicks on like that, dude. It's so funny. And I'm just cheering the entire time. It's great.
What is that Indian lesbian and Sam Kinison?
Yeah, that is my favorite line. Why are you letting Sam Kinison and an Indian lesbian ruin your wedding?
Yes. Oh my God, it's always so funny.
That has to be my favorite line of the entire show.
It doesn't matter how many times I've seen these episodes, I laugh at it every time, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I got the same thing, like, really, just when Jeff and Lester, when they came on in the last episode, and it was like they were the ones that saved the day by singing Take On Me. Uh-huh. And he's like, you know, the guy's like, "What's that?" And he's like, "Two words, Jeffster." Like, I like got out of my chair, you know, and was like, "Yeah!"
Yes, you know? It's so fantastic. That's the best. And that, you know, finale, that Jeffster moment was so good.
Yeah, exactly.
So freaking awesome.
Well, it's funny because all the big moments on the show, like the really, really big moments, were punctuated by Jeffster stuff. Yeah. And I love those two characters so much. It worked out perfect for me.
Like, even like when he's fighting Shaw in the Bymore, and Jeff and Lester just filmed Blaze of Glory, their video they've been working on. And it gets like, it's this dramatic moment where Chuck is fighting Shaw for his life. The Intersect is messing up his brain, but the DVD gets pushed into the player. I just love that they do that. And it works. That scene, that whole Shaw fight with Blaze of Glory, I'm just like, God, I freaking love this show.
Yeah. So what show for you was the one that was really, like, what episode for you was the one that really had you hooked?
You know, just, you know, going back over, you know, doing the Chuck series companion, rewatching them, I'd have to say that Tom Sawyer was literally when I was like, okay, I love this show. Because I've learned to even love season one more after watching it multiple times. But when it first aired, it was a show that I DVR'd every week, you know, like, oh, there's a new episode of Chuck, and I watch it. And I think even on Nowhere in Mulberry, we talked about the very first episode. And that was it. But I said that, oh, I liked it, I'm definitely going to watch some more. And that's pretty much all I say about it. So it made a good impression with me. But that episode, you know, Tom Sawyer, I just knew that, okay, this show's won me over. You know, like, I absolutely love the show, you know?
Yeah. Why do you think it was that you guys made the decision not to cover it on the show?
Oh, it wasn't a we kind of thing. It was just me. Chuck, I love so much. I didn't want somebody to bash it like it was Smallville or something.
Yeah, you didn't want to have to defend it every week, and I understand that.
Yeah, I wanted to just enjoy it for me, you know? Mm-hmm. This is my show, and I don't have to defend it to anybody is the way I felt.
Well, it's funny because I can see how you would be protective of it, because even now I haven't really recommended the show to anybody because I don't want them to not like it. You know, I don't, like you're saying, I don't want to have to defend it. I've talked to some people and been like, you know, have you watched Chuck? And they're like, yeah, I watched that when it was out. It was great. And then I feel kind of like they're in the club and we can talk about it, but I haven't really shared the show with my wife or anything. It's because I don't want to think less of my wife if she doesn't like it, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So Heather watched season one with me, kind of like she's on the couch with like a magazine or something, you know?
Looking on her phone. Yeah, I understand.
Yeah. I remember her watching the season two finale with me, and I think that's the last time she ever watched Chuck, just because whatever happened, I would just basically, you know, DVR it and then watch it the next day while she's at work or something. And she just never caught up with it again. But here's a funny thing. The entire time, whatever, I love Chuck, Heather's mom, my mother-in-law, she watched Chuck regularly every week it was on.
Really? That's awesome.
Her and, you know, even Heather's dad would watch it. And it was funny, not until it was around season five, Emma told me that she watched it every Friday with her grandparents. And I was like, you've been watching Chuck this whole time? You know, and I was just like, holy crap. And she, you know, she did a series watch on Netflix. She binged like the entire thing. And then Emma could talk to me about it. And that was really cool.
Does she like it? I mean, is it a show she likes?
Oh yeah. She loved it. And that's season so cool. Five was her favorite. She's like, I love season five. I just keep watching it. I was like, season five? Really? I think the reason she loves that season so much is because Chuck and Sarah are together, you know?
Yeah.
She thinks the ending's really sad, but that's one thing you and I haven't talked about.
We'll get into it.
you know that the finale is very polarizing, right?
I can imagine.
When the season ended, season five happened, and it ended, I honestly was heartbroken that the show was over. I was like, oh, yeah, that was good or whatever. And it was kind of like Fringe just ended, too. And when Fringe ended, it ended in a way where I was like, okay, goodbye, Fringe. That was a great show. I loved it. But I didn't feel heartbroken over it. I was ready, you know. But Chuck, when that ended, I was like, I'm not ready. I can't get over this. And I remember thinking, oh my God, I could order the season one Blu-ray right now on Amazon. I'll do that. So, and I remember I found it cheaper, like on the WB store. And I was real excited. Like I could buy like each season for like $20 or whatever. So I remember popping in the season one Blu-ray and like, oh my God, I have Chuck again. I could just rewatch it. And you know, you don't remember half the stuff you watched in 2007 anyway. That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
So it was like watching it for the first time again. And you know, it's like, oh, this is the first time they call it Castle. And this is where Charles Carmichael comes from. You don't remember any of that stuff when it first happened because it was so long ago. So then when I got into season two and then, you know, remembered this stuff and then, oh, there's Chuck's dad. Oh, this is so great. And as I was working through each season, it's like I got double the enjoyment I did watching it the first time. Even though I kind of knew what was going to happen from what I could remember, I still was getting that enjoyment. And I swear this is what happened, that season five hadn't come out on Blu-ray yet because it had just ended. And I was almost through season four. And I told Heather, okay, my birthday's coming up in October and season five of Chuck comes out. That's all I want for my birthday. That's all I want. Okay. You know, it should be easy. And I'll never forget. I usually have a birthday at, we go to this Mexican restaurant called Campo Verde. do it every single year. And I remember Heather saying in the car, "Oh shit," like out loud. Uh-huh. And I go, "What? What's wrong?" She goes, "Nothing, nothing. You and Stephen and Emma, after the dinner, you guys go home. I'm going to meet you guys there separately." And I was like, "Why?" She was like, "Don't worry about it," or whatever. She realized she didn't get Chuck Season 5 for me. Oh. She got me some other stuff, but I'll never forget. Like, I got basically handed Season 5 in a Blu-ray, in a Best Buy bag, you know? But that's still awesome. That was okay, you know. Yeah, but there's always this sense of sadness when I get up to Season 5, you know.
Oh, there was a sense of dread. I wrote to you, you know, I had texted you that I had 11 episodes left, and that, like, final 11 episodes, especially the last four, it took me forever to get through them because I didn't want to be done with it, you know. I had always, watching through it, was like, "Oh man, I still got like 40 episodes left. This is awesome. I'm having such a good time." And then when it was like, "Oh wow, it really creeped up on me. This is the end." I was dreading it. Well, and I could see how you would feel at the end of that, at the end of Season 5, just being like, "So that's over?" You know, like, especially pouring all that time into it. For me, it wasn't that tough because I'd watched it in 3 weeks. So it was like, you know, I didn't have a whole, you know, 5 years of being attached to it. But I also had your show, The Companion, to go back on. And then what I've been doing now is, as you release a show, I'll watch the show too. So I can kind of digest the show a little bit more than I did, because I did such a binge watch on that a lot of times the episodes have a tendency to blur together as just one giant story arc, you know?
And you know what I secretly hope for is what happened in Season 3 is originally NBC picked up 9 episodes of Chuck.
Yeah.
And so as Season 3 happened, they picked up 13 episodes or whatever. So it's like, "Oh great, there's going to be 13. So if you watch that episode 13 of Season 3, Chuck versus the Other Guy, that's where he defeats Shaw, or he shoots him on the bridge. And then Chuck and Sarah wake up, they're in Paris. You see the Eiffel Tower in the background and they're kissing under the covers. And Beckman is like, "Hello, hello." And they just basically hang up on her because they're together now. Right.
Yeah.
That could have easily been the end of Chuck right there, the final episode. Because I think even stuff at the Bymore wraps up, you know, where it's like, okay, the show's over. But NBC ordered, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They ordered 6 more episodes after that. So they're like, "Okay, what do we do now?" And then there was Chuck versus the Honeymooners. So it was like they got like this reprieve from death row, you know, like, And then they even greenlit Chuck for Season 4. And the episode Chuck versus the Push Mix is, you know, where Ellie has the baby, Chuck proposes to Sarah. That's episode 13 again, where they've thought, okay, episode 13, this will be the final episode of Chuck ever. And it's got an incredible ending. But NBC picked up more episodes, and they actually gave them 24 episodes of Season 4.
Wow.
So that wasn't the end. So this is what I honestly thought was going to happen. I'm not kidding you. Chuck versus the Goodbye is the 13th episode of Season 5. I just knew that they were going to order a back nine.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, they're going to give Season 5 22 episodes because that's going to be 100 episodes. Because, you know, if you make 100 episodes of a show, it's going to be syndicated. I just knew it was going to happen, and it didn't happen. And I was just like, "Oh, shit." But I swear, like, I truly believe, like, I don't care what anyone says, it's going to happen because it's happened.
It has to.
These other times, it's just destined to have 100 episodes, you see? And when it didn't happen, I was heartbroken.
Yeah.
And I almost think that when it ended like that, part of me wonders, you know, Chris Fedak or Josh Schwartz, they were like, "Okay, this is the story we're going to do if we get picked up for 9 more episodes of Season 5. And I know they had a storyline in mind. I just know it was being set up. Just part of me thinks that. And as I rewatched the finale several times, I see little things that they could have done. Like, remember when Awesome and Ellie went to be Doctors Without Borders, and you're like, well, how are they going to get them back?
Yeah.
Easily. That's how easy it is. You're a writer. You can do whatever you want.
No, anytime you think they're painted, like anybody's painted into the a corner in this show, it's just, you know, they're able to work around it.
Yeah,
so,
like,
so fine.
Awesome and Ellie are going to Chicago? Oh, they can never come back. Yeah, they could easily, you know?
Yeah. What happened in Chicago? Oh, we didn't like it. Yeah, there you go. We're back on.
It's
back
too
on track.
Cold, bro. I'm used to Burbank or whatever.
I can't keep my shirt off in Chicago.
Yeah, but I almost like I've just done that episode Chuck versus the oh my God, Chuck versus the fat lady, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they introduced the guy at the opera house, the Fulcrum agent. He disappears after that episode, and you never see him again until the final episode, Chuck versus the Goodbye. Did you realize that?
No, I didn't realize that.
He's on the airplane with Quinn.
Oh, right.
He's like sipping champagne, and he's like, the ring. Those guys were amateurs.
Amateurs, yeah.
I was like, that guy's the big bad guy. That's going to be the big bad guy of the final 9 episodes. That's what I think would have happened. I really think that, you know, he's way back in season 2, disappeared. It turns out he's more important than anyone ever thought. So anyway, for my Chuck fan fiction, that guy's the bad guy.
Can imagine. Well, that was one of the things that I thought was a little weak about season 5, was that it seemed like they were tying the end and wrapping everything up with Quinn, who wasn't a big, you know, he was just another guy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah.
He didn't seem like the final boss that they would have to face. I almost thought that they would bring Shaw back for that point instead of bringing it back when they did.
When Shaw actually gets defeated in, what is it, Chuck versus the Santa suit? It's like, oh, okay, he's not the big bad guy for the end of the season, you know? It's like, where do we go from here? I think Chuck versus the baby, remember that episode? That's like
the
final
time. That's a great episode.
That's a great episode, the way it ends with the whole family together. They've got Sarah's mom there and now her new sister, you know, essentially.
Uh-huh.
It's like, that's the last time all the cast is together and it's super happy, you know? And every time I watch that episode, that's when the dread creeps in.
Yeah.
That, oh shit, we've got nothing but...
yeah, bummer left.
Yeah. I mean, there's some funny stuff with Jeff and Lester. Like, remember the Bo Derek episode? That stuff's
funny. Oh, yeah,
funny.
Great one.
They go to the other Bymore that's... I mean, it's all funny stuff, but season 5, you know, I can watch it, enjoy it, and even the ending, I appreciate it. And I, you know, when I first watched the ending, I liked it very much. I'm going to say that, you know, I got teary-eyed, and then it ended, and I'm like, oh, okay, that's what they chose to do. Because you're just waiting for Sarah to get her memories back the entire episode. Were you also?
I was. I don't know if I necessarily was. I thought she would, but I see. I like the ending. I was completely satisfied by it, and I'll defend it if you know in a little bit. But
right.
I wasn't necessarily sure that I thought she was going to get her memories back. Maybe that they were going to kind of do like, you know how she got the Irene Dimova memory back at
right,
the
right.
end. I was thinking maybe she would get like one of the memories that she had of Chuck back. And then it would kind of leave it open for us to be like, oh, they're going to build on that.
I guess,
you know?
I should say that. Do you believe that she did get her memories back? We just didn't see it.
Do I believe that? Yeah, I do. I mean,
yeah.
I don't know if I necessarily believe she got them back from the kiss, you know?
Uh-huh.
But for me, the ending works very well because the ending is like they've completely wrapped everything up that they had set up in the first episode. You know what I'm saying? Right. You have the bookends on the beach, right?
The fact that she found that spot on the beach without being told about it showed that she remembered in some semblance in her brain, you know, there's something there.
Yeah. Well, in the first episode, what do we have? We have Chuck, who is this person who is like, he's broken, basically. He's got problems with his parents. They're gone. He's got problems with his sister who thinks he's an underachiever. He's a loser, not living up to his potential. He wants a girlfriend and somebody that he can really connect with. And he's like, you know, they even do it visually. He's sitting to the right of Sarah and she's sitting to the left. And then in that last episode, they're swapped. And now he's in the position, because of the entire show, where everything has worked out for him, and now he's the one who can, who's strong enough now to be able to help Sarah, who's right. who's in this other position. And so just because I've been through the five seasons and know that, you know, through the power of love and the power of buy more, that you can work anything out and change this person into the person who can now sit on the left and help the person sitting on the right. They've got to be able to work it out, you know?
Yeah,
and maybe I'm just a diehard optimist, but in my brain, the way this show is, it would work out, you know, definitely.
When I first watched that episode and she says, "Kiss me, Chuck," you know, and the tears well up or whatever, you realize everything he told her, she now trusts him. And she's saying, "Kiss me," because, hey, this sounds pretty good. What you just told me, you know, I believe that I fell in love with you or whatever. She's basically putting herself in his hands. And when it goes to the end, I truly believe that, okay, everything's going to be fine for these kids, you know? I honestly believe that. And I, for a long time, you know, I would say that I don't know if she got all her memories back right after the kiss, but I believe that she will get them back over time. But I do believe she will get her memories back and be herself. I do believe that.
They're still the same people. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
She's still the same exact person she was before. She doesn't have the memories that she had, but Chuck is still the same. She's still the same. They're still going to want the things that they want. So there's that. But also Morgan says it in the episode, all you got to do is kiss her. And so, you know, I think Morgan's right.
Yeah, and as I've watched that episode several times, she remembers several things over time, you know, from their past together, that you can tell little memories are still there. I don't think Quinn erased her memories. I think they're just dormant somewhere in her brain, you know what I mean? Because it's the power of love, man. You just can't kill that, you know?
I was hoping that they would have Jeffster come in and sing the power of love or the glory of love or whatever.
I also think, a lot of people hate ambivalent endings. They hate the audience will figure it out for themselves. A lot of people don't do that. And I understand that. Ambiguous.
I get it.
People do not like ambiguous endings. And the fact that they chose to go that way, you know, I remember even when I was watching it, I go, oh, I see they chose the ambiguous ending. Okay, because you could easily do that with any series finale, either going to give a definitive ending or give you the ambiguous ending where here's my problem with it now after this many years later. Here's my problem with the way Chuck ended is that I have no closure, man, and I need it. It's proof that I need a closure because I keep going back and watching the damn thing over and again, you know?
Could it be that maybe it's not necessarily closure that you need, it's just that you really enjoy Chuck and want to keep enjoying it?
That's true, yes.
So, like, for me, I see how they went with the ambiguous ending, but I feel like everybody's focusing on the idea of Chuck and Sarah being the story, you know? Mm-hmm. And for me, it's not a story about Chuck and Sarah. It's a story about Chuck. And it's a story about Chuck getting from being a loser to being this person that he is now. And so I get plenty of closure because he has changed, you know? And that's who the story for me is ultimately about.
I think a lot of people, you know, over the course of the series, you fall in love with Sarah. And for a lot of people, the show was Sarah for them. Mm-hmm. So the fact I know this for a fact that there's some people who Sarah was the reason they watched the show, you know, which she's an awesome character.
Oh, so amazing.
The fact that they have a problem with them. This is me talking to a Chuck fan personally that I've met who does a Chuck site, Christopher. He feels like they just erased everything that was awesome about Sarah in the final two episodes, or the final three if you count Bullet Train. Mm-hmm. And that's what just drives him crazy. And
I can see that. I can also see that there is an element of erasing her memory that is the same thing. It ticks the same parts of the brain that annoy you when you're watching Lost and they're stuck inside the bear cage, uh-huh. you know? It's like this frustrating little trap that you don't really like. that's very annoying. So I can see how people would be annoyed by it. And it did kind of annoy me, too. I wanted them to be, you know, doing what they usually do. But like I said, I had enough closure in the ending. Maybe looking at it the way I'm doing has just been a way for me to justify the ending so it wouldn't bother me and I can move on, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, I still am okay with the ending, but I realize that I need some more Chuck. I realize it's not enough for me. That's what I come to grips with, the fact that I didn't get closure like I did with, say, Lost. Once Lost ended, I was done with it. I have no desire to go back to watch Lost. Once Battlestar Galactica ended, it's done. I have no desire to go back and rewatch that. I'm done with it. Seriously, I love the show, but I have no desire. Chuck, though, I'm like, okay, I got to start over. You know, it's just like, that's the way I feel about it. And I almost think if it would have ended with Chuck and Sarah finds out she's pregnant. And we find out, you know, Morgan and Alex, they're going to get married or something. I don't know. Whatever. Cut to at the very end. Somebody's having a baby. I was thinking of just like Parenthood. You think it's Sarah about to have the baby. She's going to give birth, but it's Morgan. And he says, it's a girl. And then it cuts to Chuck and Sarah and they already have their baby or whatever. And then, you know, I just picture the whole thing and I'm just like, okay, would that have been cheesy, or it would have been like, okay, I could say goodbye to the show now. You know?
Or actually even better. He says it's a girl and you think it's Morgan's, but it's actually Casey and Verbansky's daughter. And so now, yes, there you go. You should.
And not only that, but General Beckman and Roan Montgomery are there too.
And they have a kid. Everybody just has kids.
Everybody has children. And then Chuck 2.0 is all their kids going to their same
school. Yeah, exactly. Do you think that if they would have done that and had her memory come back and kind of wrapped it up in this nice little package, do you think that you would still be going back to it as much? Or do you think you would have been able to move on?
I honestly don't know. Because the show had everything that I wanted in a show, that maybe it's just got everything that just clicked for me, where I just would just keep watching it over again, you know?
Yeah.
It's hard to say. It really is.
Because Sopranos was ambiguous. In its ending.
God.
Did you ever find yourself?
Ending. That's the most ambiguous ending in TV history.
Yeah, definitely. But did you find yourself gravitating towards that, needing closure from that one?
No, I always have a theory of what happened at the end of The Sopranos, and I was fine with it.
Oh, okay.
Because I guess you watched the whole run of The Sopranos, right?
You know, I didn't. I watched like the first like several seasons, and then didn't see the last three seasons or something like that. Because I was watching them on DVD with Adam's dad, and then I got married, and it was like, well, I can't go over to his house every night and watch The Sopranos with him like I was. So that would kind of be inappropriate. I don't think my newly married wife would have liked that.
So you've never seen the end of The Sopranos?
Well, I know the ending because many people referenced it, and I think it was one of those things where it was like, I was holding out when you guys would talk about it. I would just skip that part of the show, but eventually it was such a big part of pop culture that I just knew how it ended.
By the way, how great is it when Polly Walnut shows up on Chuck?
It's great.
I think it's fantastic.
Well, that episode was so funny where you got the two of them. They're like arguing, and Casey? No, it was Chuck who was the one who was supposed to be the. That was Chuck. That Chuck versus the Beefcake?
Chuck is the assassin, and
that's right. That's great. Great episode.
Let me see. That is Chuck versus the fake name, I believe.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Oh, I always get the guy who's like the Beefcake and then that assassin guy kind of mixed up in my mind.
Yeah, the Beefcake. That's the Agent Barker guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. What I liked about that guy, as opposed to Shaw, is he genuinely liked Chuck. You know, he would even call Chuck buddy, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, Chuck won that guy over, you know?
Yeah, that character, it kind of, you know, that he was basically the male version of Sarah, really. You know, he wasn't tied to anybody. He was very professional and amazing at his job. And you know, it was kind of like you could see, does Sarah want to pick this guy who's very hunky and very capable, or the other person, you know, being Chuck, who yeah. is, you know, not at all want.
There's one line, I think it's the beginning of season two, where Chuck says, you know, I'm no James Bond. And Sarah says, I don't want James Bond. But she doesn't finish her sentence where basically she's saying, I want you, you know. Uh-huh. But, it, you know, that guy, when he shows up, I was never threatened by him, you know, stealing Sarah away from Chuck, because I already know Sarah doesn't go for that kind of guy, you know.
Yeah, definitely.
She likes nerds.
Yes, which gives hope to everybody. If Chuck can pull down, you know, it's funny. The one area that I had that I nitpicked the entire show, that I usually don't nitpick the stuff. Like I said, I'm a Young and the Restless fan. My threshold is very low for nitpicking stuff. Is when Chuck puts on the suit that's his dad's suit, you know, and she's like, oh, you're wearing dad's suit. And he's like, yeah, it's the only one I have. And then we finally find out that his dad is Scott Bakula, who's like a full foot and a half shorter than Chuck. I was like, his suit wouldn't have fit him. You know?
Yeah. But, you know, but of course, he wasn't cast yet in the show.
That's, that's true. Definitely. That was the one time where I was like, wait a minute.
I wish so bad there could have been a scene with Linda Hamilton and Scott Bakula together, you know?
Yeah, I'm surprised that they didn't give them that time.
I mean, I think, what about when Chuck's dad died, did you think, okay, this guy's dead? Or did you think, is this show going to do what some shows do where somebody comes back from the dead?
I initially thought that he was dead, you know, when they shot him, because he shot him in the head. But I did really kind of buy into it in, I believe, is it in season four, when they kind of fake it and make Volkov think that he's back, you know, and yeah, they go to the cabin. I was thinking that he, Betty might have been back. I was waiting for that time to happen. But then to find out that Volkov was, you know, it was Orion's fault that Volkov was the way that he was. Right. I was not expecting that at all. I was just,
I always think that revelation of Agent X in season four, it works every time. I'm like, oh yeah, oh my God. You know, like,
yeah. Well, especially with his mom, it's so cool. She's just willing to like break out the 50 cal or whatever.
Well, Casey's like, I love this woman.
Yeah, I imagine him and Verbansky going back and visiting her when they go
holiday.
On the trip.
Yeah, I love that. Can you think of your most favorite moments from the series?
They really all have to do. They're all Jeffster scenes. Most of the stuff that happened with Jeff and Lester, just it was so funny to me. The singing parts were amazing. I love the part that you keep texting me about the Isle of Terror, where they're like, yes. You know, is it a baby or a snail? It's just so funny. Those two characters, like I know people would get irritated eventually, but I want them to have their own show. You know?
Oh yeah, the Jeffster show.
Exactly.
That's what's so cool is when the Chuck soundtrack came out, there's Jeffster tracks on there that I thought was so awesome.
Oh, I know. I've been listening to it because I found a video on YouTube that somebody did that was just all of the Jeffster scenes, like all their songs. But then when I didn't realize I'd listened to the episode where you'd said that they came out with the soundtrack and that they were on it. And so, yeah, I've been bumping Jeffster in my car. And my kids are like, what is this? Like, just go back to playing with my phone, whatever.
Well, that's what's so funny. Also, when I bought Chuck on Blu-ray, I was so happy to just see the words Chuck sitting there on the shelf that I was like, I've got a, you know, I bought the CD digitally, you know, where I could just download it. I don't need to own it, but I was like, no, I want to physically own it and see it sitting there on the shelf with the word Chuck there.
Yeah.
It's like I had to physically.
You had to have a tangible artifact. I understand.
Yeah. And there's this guy who wrote two books called Unpacking Chuck, the TV series Interpreted. And this is so funny because I, you know, you've heard me talk about film as art, how I hate those classes where people like analyze the Christ figure in movies and stuff.
Oh, I have a. I went to film school, so like I suffered through a lot of that.
Okay, like, so you know exactly.
I know exactly what you're talking
this
about.
This guy's books, Unpacking Chuck. It's that same thing where he's analyzing everything. But here's the thing: I bought the first book just because I wanted a Chuck book. I wanted to have it.
Yeah, that's so funny.
And it's it's basically analyzing everything about Chuck and Sarah and the symbolism and stuff. And I started reading it, and I'm just like, my brain just doesn't work like
this. Why? No, yeah, I've sat through hundreds of hours of classes like that, and my brain still doesn't work like that. Because most of the time, it's like Stephen King says, sometimes, I forget what the artifact he used, but like sometimes an orange is just an orange. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It doesn't have to have some symbolism. That's why it's funny when you guys did your Dark Tower shows, there you got a review on iTunes where somebody was like upset because you weren't going into the symbolism of what he meant, and I'm like, well, I mean, that's so ambiguous. You know what I'm saying? Unless you have him sitting there telling you, oh, yeah, when Roland, when he does when he gets his fingers chopped off or whatever, that meant specifically this.
Yeah.
I don't really care about your interpretation of what you think it means.
Right. And I realized that, when I bought that book, it's because I'm starved for more Chuck material.
I totally get it. I mean, you were talking before about how you think there should be Chuck books and Chuck, and Chuck movies, like they're doing the Sherlock Holmes things. Why not? I definitely think the demand is there.
One of Heather's favorite shows was Burn Notice. She absolutely loved that show, and she'd collect the Burn Notice novels that would come out, and I would be like, why aren't there Chuck books like this? What the hell? This is... How do I get one? That they don't have them, but I guarantee you people would buy them if they had them.
I know how you get one, Jason. You got to write your own. You got to come out with your Jastrom brand of Chuck fan fiction.
Believe me, I've already thought of the name of it because
what would it be?
Season 5 never got the back 9 episodes. Uh-huh. It would be Chuck versus the back 9, and it would be it would be broken up into 9 parts, like 9 episodes.
Yeah, I think there definitely needs to be more. I mean, you're right, because for me the ending, them ending it the way they did, didn't bother me. But I did come away from it when I was done with this just kind of sigh, like I had texted you the idea of like your cool neighbor moving away. Yeah. Somebody that you just seem to really connect with.
That
they get
was a good
a job out of town or something because
that literally,
you just. There really is a sense of loss, when they're gone.
That's totally what it is. It's like your childhood friend moved away, and you can't get them back because they moved out of state. But you'll never have fun like that again,
Yeah, you have the memories of it, and you can go back and watch all the funny videos that you made. But the new times that you're going to make with them are gone, and there's just something incredibly sad about that because that group of characters really makes you feel. Like you're almost a part of it,
Yeah, that's when I realized that they were my surrogate family.
Yeah, definitely. Like I wanted to be Fernando's brother, or Skip's brother.
Yeah. You know how when I've talked about many times on the show, or Steve and I have, about working at MJ Designs?
Yeah.
The worst moment ever is when Steven left MJ Designs
and I was still there. Horrible.
That sucks so bad. I had to get used to Steven being gone. Of course,
how long did you work there with him being gone?
He could probably answer me way quicker. But I'm going to say we probably worked together there for at least 5 years before he left.
Oh, man.
And it was just like, what do I do without Steven here?
Yeah, exactly. This is the whole reason why I show up every day and he's gone. Yeah, I totally get it. I totally get it.
So that's what Chuck was. Chuck was like the guy who moved away. And I identify a lot of like the Buy More as MJ Designs. I mean, I worked at that place. Not the same store, mind you. I went to different locations, but for 13 years. So
yeah, jeez. It's funny every time because I had to go to Best Buy the other day for some reason. And when I was in there, I was like, you guys aren't the Buy More. You want to be the Buy More, but you're not the Buy More.
Whenever I'm in a Best Buy, I'm like, I wish this was the Buy More.
Yeah, definitely.
I would totally ask spaced out Jeff to help me with something.
Yeah, I'd break my computer just to have Lester fix it for me because I have a Mac and he's a Mac guy.
I'd go up to Fernando just to find out what he sounds like.
Just to hear what his voice sounds like.
Fernando. I love how that dude's face is perpetually red.
Yeah, I know. My favorite, though, is Skip, like the other guy with the huge bushy hair.
Yeah, he's got a big fro.
And then he finally, in the last episode, or I think he had another time where he won. Did he win something? And he was like, he got a line there, but they actually gave him a line in the last episode when they put out the APP to all the creepy people.
Yeah. Is that Michael, the guy with the big fro? Because remember, there's a recent episode of Chuck where he was playing poker with them and he didn't have any lines, but Morgan goes, okay, you're up, Michael, or something like that.
Oh, maybe it was Michael. I thought his name was Skip, but it could be Michael.
It might have been. I don't know. Those guys. It's so cool that those guys were alike on every episode, but they never got to talk, you know?
Yeah, well, it's just funny. Like, the cast of characters, like of background characters, they looked like they would work at a Best Buy. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, nobody's perfect Hollywood people. They look like the dregs of Burbank, and that's kind of what you go to a Best Buy, you know? His name is Skip Johnson on the show, but his name in real life is like Michael Kowazinski or something like that.
Oh, so do you think Morgan called him Michael on accident?
I kind of wondered about that. I didn't realize that he had called him that. It's awesome.
That'd be funny.
That's pretty impressive that your Chuck knowledge is that deep that you can pull that one mistake out. That's incredible.
Yeah, it's because of the Chuck series companion.
Yeah, exactly.
that's what I want to ask you about, because it wasn't when I originally watched the show, but over time I would go, what song is that? And I would start looking up bands,
dude.
And I learned like so many bands like Spoon and Rogue Wave from the show.
Around 2007-ish was when I got my iPod. And that was the time. It was actually funny. Adam will tell you. I was actually having the debate between getting an iPod and a Zune, because at the time I listened to a lot of radio, and so I was like, well, shoot, I still want to have a radio tuner in it, and the Zune, you know. And after the day I bought my iPod, I'd never listen to the radio ever again. But my friend Eric, who designed your logo, he was a big BitTorrent guy, and he is really into music, and so he sent me all of this music that was popular then, and it was all bands like Blitz and Trapper and Band of Horses and Bon Iver, all these songs that ended up on Chuck. And so I'm watching it and I'm like, dude, this is like what my iPod was like, that I listened constantly, you know? So all this stuff, so I've got this amazing show with characters that I love, punctuated and you know, playing all this music that I adore, that I still listen to this day.
Oh, man.
So yeah, there's so many great things on there. And the I've listened to the song Fake Empire since watching the show probably 30 times.
Oh yeah, it's a great song. That's so funny, because yeah, Chuck basically has taught me so many bands, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I love it. Like the band Eels, I didn't know who they were, but Chuck taught me who they are.
Well, there's a lot of bands on there and the music that they were playing that I'd never even heard, you know, and so I want to go back because it all seems like it's right in my wheelhouse, basically.
Oh, like Frightened Rabbit. I never would have known who they were without Chuck.
What song did they sing? Do you remember what episode it was?
Okay, several songs, but if you remember in Chuck versus the First Date, when they're uploading the new Intersect and Chuck is preparing the meal and Casey's sneaking in the window and he's got his gun with a silencer and he's going to kill Chuck.
Okay. Yeah.
And there's that song playing. And then at the end of Chuck versus the Fat Lady, Jill and Chuck are in bed and they're doing stuff. And then Sarah and Casey see on the monitor, she's Fulcrum, and they run in there in slow motion. That's
Yeah. Okay. I know exactly what you're talking about now. Yeah. I'm going to have to listen to that some more. You have alluded, or not alluded, you basically come out and said that basically Tim Jones is amazing and his music, you know, it is, it's great. What is he doing now? Is he doing anything else, or like, is he doing stuff for other shows?
He does live shows. I follow him on Facebook, so he does live shows like in California and stuff, but not that I can tell, because he's fantastic. And yeah, it's a crime that he's not working on a show right now if he's not. I'll see that, like, the most recent show I saw, let's see, he did 13 episodes of this show called Cult on the CW.
Never heard of it.
But he's doing music, let's see, post-production, something called The Secrets of Emily Blair. And then he did a documentary, music for documentary. So he's not doing a series or anything. And he could totally do movies. I think he's fantastic. The thing about Chuck, the way it was scored, no other TV show is scored like that show. I mean, if you watch any other show, it's the music, it's hard to identify it. You know, it doesn't have...
Yeah, it fades into the background.
The music of Chuck is its own character. It's got its own personality, you know? Like, all that music, the Buy More music, the... I call it the popcorn music, that... you know, the Jeff and Lester music or whatever. Emmett had his own theme. It's just... it had its own personality, and I've never seen another TV show that has music like that.
Well, it's kind of like every time I've edited something or even when I watch something, whenever I have music in there that has the words to it, I always find that there's like this kind of it is difficult for me to follow. You know what I'm saying? When there's dialogue and then you have the words for the song that are in the background. But I never got that from Chuck for some reason. I was so drawn into the story, and they kind of just weaved it all in and out together so well that I never even really noticed it. It was just a very well put together show.
Yeah, totally. The whoever was picking all the music and the, you know, the songs with bands and stuff, and then the Tim Jones, whoever thought of that was just genius, you know.
Yeah.
The fact that they it's just everything came together perfectly from the cast. Like, Yvonne Strahovski had never done anything in America. This was her first job in America that she'd ever done.
That's see, I didn't even realize until well after I'd finished the show that she was from Australia.
Yeah, she wasn't even known here at all. She literally just sent in a video audition. And I had known of Zachary Levi just from that goofy ABC show that he did. God, I can't even remember the name of it. But I remember Heather and her mom would watch this show. He played like this goofy guy on there. I'm going to have to look it up on IMDb now.
Yeah, the only thing I had known him from before, and I didn't even know that it was him as Flynn Rider in Tangled, which is a movie I love. It's probably my favorite Disney movie. One of those movies that just every time I see it gets me all choked up. But and I loved that character. I didn't realize it was the same guy. But now that every time I watch Tangled with my kids, I'm like, oh, yeah, it's Chuck. Oh, this is awesome.
Okay, he was in a show called Less Than Perfect. He played Kip on that
show. There you go. Oh, of course. No, I don't
he's
know.
He's like a brown-nosing guy on there. He's actually pretty funny. He's kind of weaselly. It's funny to see him in a different kind of role. But
he needs to do everything, in my opinion. He needs to be in every role that they come up with on, you know, like any role that they're like, who's going to play young Han Solo? It's like, I want Zachary Levi.
Well,
I know he's too old. I know he's probably the age of Han when he was in Empire Strikes Back, but I still want him in there.
That's what's so cool about Zachary Levi is that he does vulnerable. He does like goofy and silly where he acts like a jackass, but he also does like serious. He can do that too.
Yeah, he's just a really amazing actor and a very interesting guy, and I hope that, you know, you can tell that he wants to get more Chuck out there. And, I mean, can you imagine working on Chuck, and because you know they had to have a blast doing this, and then going and doing something else like Heroes or whatever? Like,
yeah.
I know you want to extend your range as an actor and try something different, but I mean, the amount of joy that had to be on that set. Think about the fact that, like, you need the closure from just watching it. Think about what it's got to feel like to have not be able to make it anymore.
You know, I've watched many, like, interviews with him and Yvonne Strahovski, and every year they do a panel together with his Nerd HQ,
yeah.
And nobody asked the question that I would totally ask, which is, how did you feel about the Sarah loses her memory storyline? I'm yeah. just curious about it. But nobody ever asked that. You know, maybe she would say, oh, it's fine. You know, the writers, I just do what they say or something. Or like, I hated it. You know, I would just love
to. Or she'd be like, I hated that character. I never want to play that character again. You'd be like, no.
Well, they always ask, would you be willing to do a Chuck movie? And of course, they always say, yeah. The thing that drives me nuts is that people keep asking it. It's like, they've already answered you. Stop asking them. You know, that's the way I feel anyway. But
so has your opinion changed on the Chuck movie at all? Yeah. I mean, you know, what do you do? Everybody, it just seems the people want to make it. Everybody wants to watch it, or at least I do. And I'm the only person whose opinion really matters to me. So, you know, get out there and make it. Start making the content again.
I honestly think it will happen. I mean, I never thought there would be a Veronica Mars movie, and there was. I think there could easily be more now than ever. We see, dude, they're doing X-Files again. They're doing Twin Peaks again.
Yeah,
they're doing Heroes, a show that got canceled because it sucked again.
It was terrible again.
And the fact that Zachary Levi is going to be in the new season, I will watch it. But when I saw the trailer and it had that same Heroes music, that... and I groaned. I was like, God, I don't want to have to sit through this stupid show again.
when Chuck was you know, digging through his dad's files and everything like that, and he was talking about like all the work that his dad had done, all I could think of was my father's research.
Yes.
From Heroes.
I love how great was that moment in Chuck when you see the back of the Tron poster has all of the stuff
yeah.
on there.
So awesome. How awesome was it that they actually had Tron in the show? You know?
I know. Fantastic. Yeah. They had like, hey, let's put Tron on the show. And he doesn't like Jeffster either.
There you go. Yeah, he's a very straight-laced person who's been married to Morgan Fairchild forever.
Sam Kinison and Indian lesbian.
That's exact.
It's funny because... rewatching the show also, I love how much whenever Jeff and Lester show up in front of Ellie, how like disgusted she is with them. Like, ugh. You know?
Well, it's like even a deeper level of disgust than she had with Morgan at the, cause in Morgan, at least she would talk to him, but those two, it's like, she just wants nothing to do with them.
She wants to slam the door in their faces immediately. And yeah. I love that. There's that line earlier in season one, when Lester sees LA and goes, of course I recognize Chuck's sensual lips.
Yeah. I love the scene when Lester, like he's getting his bride, basically the woman who was supposed to, and so he's like in the theater room, the home theater room, and trying to live the life of the perfect Hindu or whatever. But then he's like, well, let me show you what I'm really like. And then he sings for her and she's like, that's the most uncomfortable thing I've ever felt in my entire life.
Yeah.
It's such a great episode.
Fantastic. When I'm watching an episode, I'm always like, oh yeah, that's when this happens. I never remember, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, that's when this happens. That's when this happens. But I got to tell you, I'm so excited working my way up to Chuck versus Santa Claus. I can't wait to get to that episode.
Oh, yeah.
Where the guy infiltrates the Bymore pretending to hold them hostage.
Yeah, and he's like such a likable character. And then, because doing that, like they totally suck you in to where you like start really feeling for this guy. And then it turns out that he, you know, it's a double cross. And it really sets you up for like the idea that, you know, aside from the core people on the show, you really can't trust anybody, you know?
Yeah. And how
like I was expecting the girl from the with the imported salami, Lou. I was expecting her to be like some, you know, agent or something.
Yeah. Or even Hannah. Were you waiting for Hannah to be one?
Oh yeah, definitely. I was almost happy that they didn't do that though.
Yeah, I guess it would have been too obvious, you know.
Yeah.
It's funny if you go on Wikipedia and you type in Chuck episodes, it'll tell you U.S. viewers by the million. And, like, you'll see that how it decreased over time. But the ratings were never as bad as TV ratings are now. You know, like, season 5, 3.42 million viewers. That is fantastic now.
Yeah, now.
Barely 1 point something happens on NBC. They would kill for Chuck numbers right now, you know?
Well, I'm just kind of wondering how it's doing now that it's on Netflix, you know, and it's got its own amazing podcast. If there is, if there's been a resurgence and more interest in it, kind of like, you know, how Breaking Bad picked up because people could watch all of it on Netflix.
Right. Yeah. If it wasn't for Netflix, I never could have caught up to Breaking Bad, you know?
Oh yeah. No, I know. I was banging down your door trying to get you to watch Breaking Bad from season one. And you guys were like, nope, not going to do it. And
if
yeah.
there's anything I'm glad that I binge watch, it's Breaking Bad and The Wire. Now that yeah. I binge watch those, I'm like, oh wow, I was missing out, you know?
I've only seen season one of The Wire. I had watched, I watched that one, you know, had pretty much binge watched that one. And then somebody gave me season two on DVD, but I'm kind of like, eh, I don't want to watch it on DVD. I want to see it in HD.
Yeah. The fact that they remastered it in HD and widescreen is the reason I watched it finally. Yeah. So how do you feel about Roan Montgomery as a guest actor, guest character?
It's just another in the long list of amazing Chuck cameos. I mean, John Larroquette, I loved him in Night Court, and he's always been one of those guys who yeah. you want to see in a lot more stuff, and it doesn't seem like he really gets the work that he necessarily should. So it was awesome. I mean, it was so good. He was playing basically Dan Fielding from Night Court, the same yeah. type of creepy guy who he plays so well, you know?
I love whenever Sarah and Chuck would argue, it was always funny too. You remember when he's chained in the room with them and he's like, Chuck mentions, if it wasn't for the ball and chain, and she goes, are you calling me a ball and chain? No, we literally have a ball and chain.
To a ball and chain.
Attached yeah. to her. Like, and the yeah. one where he's, assert yourself, Chuck, tell her no. And he's like, no, woman. I just love that moment where.
Yeah. Yeah. What are some of the other cameos in there that you really loved?
Well, I always loved when Karina would show up again on the show because she was kind of a barometer between like what Sarah used to be and who she is now, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I love that episode where Karina realizes that Morgan has moved on, you know?
Oh, yeah, when he asserts himself.
Yeah, but I love the Lou Ferrigno cameo where Chuck slaps him with a glove. Do you remember?
Yeah, he was somebody's bodyguard. Is that how
yeah.
it was?
Yeah.
Whose bodyguard was he?
It was like the supermodel's bodyguard.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
He was in yeah. love with her. And she's always naked. There's a part where Sarah says, put some clothes on. Oh, that was a funny episode too, because she's in the shower and Chuck and Sarah are hiding, and Chuck sticks his head out and he goes, can you see anything? And she's like, what? Like, you think I'm trying to see her naked? And he goes, no, that's not what I'm saying. Always just yeah. silly moments like that.
I also love Chevy Chase on there.
Oh
too.
Yeah. He was a great villain.
Yeah.
I love Chevy Chase as a villain.
And is that before he got all that work in Community? I don't really
yes,
know
it
when
was
Community.
Basically, after his guest in on Chuck, he went to Community.
Oh, okay.
So it was like he's back. It was like he was semi-retired or something.
Yeah, because you hadn't heard anything from him since like Vegas Vacation, and then all of a sudden,
you know
now he's.
What's funny about when he, when he was cast on season two is, as I was watching season two, I kept trying to figure out who Chuck's hair reminded me of. And his hair reminded me of like a comb over that Chevy Chase had like in Caddyshack, because, you know, and it was yeah. so funny when they cast Chevy Chase on the show, because I was like, oh, great. It's who Zachary Levi is emulating with his hair, because let's talk about
that hair is epic. Yeah, it's funny because the picture on Netflix of like, you know, that says, you know, with the logo and everything is him and with Sarah, and he looks so clean cut and debonair and everything like that. And then you cut to the first thing and it's like, gee, he's got like a mop on the top of his head.
Yeah.
Like he really looks horrible. I was expecting there to be some big episode where they, they addressed that idea of his hair, but, you know,
yeah,
never did.
There's only one episode in season one where Ellie says, Chuck, you need a haircut. But that's about it. But it's not until literally, I think season four, where his hair just looks normal.
Yeah.
And then season five, where it's like, okay, that looks normal. But season one, it's kind of long and kind of messy, but that's fine. Season two, it's a disaster.
Yeah, definitely.
And then season three, it's shorter, but it's kind of got a weird body to it, you know, kind of fluffy or something.
Yeah. I heard somebody like was reading a review, or it wasn't a review. It was an article. I think that article that you had linked to me about Chuck getting, you know, the idea that maybe they might be having another season again. And one of the comments down below was like, "Oh, this was a show that was great until they lost the everyman angle from it. You know, like when he became, you know, the." Basically Carmichael or something like that. And I didn't really get what the person was talking about. I didn't really agree with it, but the thing that really kind of punctuated that for me was his hair, was that like, as he went from like the doofy loser guy and then into the more, you know, capable spy guy, it was like an evolution of the hair, you know?
Yeah. I absolutely love that Chuck would never brandish weapons, you know? There was the one time he shot Shaw and he thought he killed him, but obviously he didn't. So it kind of was like, okay, he didn't. But I love that he used trank guns, you know?
Yeah, trank guns. And he wanted nunchucks and everything like that. It was awesome.
He wanted nunchucks because they were cool, but not that they were very practical. That's, you know, I love the character of Chuck, how he just wasn't a violent guy. And once he got the kung fu intersect, I think as season three began, some people were disappointed that he wasn't a badass right away. He was having trouble with it, which, again, you know, that goes back to, you know, in storytelling, you don't have
get what you want all the time.
Yeah, you don't have everything figured out right away.
Yeah.
I think it's cool that a testament to how strong the show was also by season five, where Chuck doesn't even have the intersect and he's fine, you know? You know, he gets it back at in the very last episode. Do you think that he, as a character, he's better off with the intersect?
I don't know, because the ride with the intersect is such a tumultuous ride throughout the whole thing, in that, like, you know, it's broken or whatever. I think he's a better character with a perfect intersect, but he almost doesn't need it towards the end. He's capable enough without it.
He's,
you know,
even learned to fight with
yeah, he doesn't exactly. He's no Morgan with the intersect, but he's still
he's no bearded bandit.
Yeah. The frosted tips. That was amazing. That was how they showed him as being evil. It was always like on Futurama when what was it? Bender, when his evil brother was there or whatever. It was just, he had that little goatee. It's the same thing. He just had frosted tips.
Can you imagine when season four ended, Chuck versus the cliffhanger, it ends with Morgan getting the intersect. Can you imagine if that was the final episode of Chuck?
Oh, man, yeah. That sucked. Talk about ambiguous. Yeah.
Like, and I think that they pretty much knew they were being picked up for a final season, but it was just like, oh, God, if this was the last one.
Yeah.
I remember reading people pissed, like, why did they give Morgan the intersect? I'm not watching this anymore. I'm like, why? What is the big deal? And he'll probably have it for one or two episodes, you know?
Why are you so upset? That's what I don't understand about, like, ratings and reviews and everything like that. It's just everybody's so upset with television. It's like, it's not that big of a deal. You don't have to get that upset about it. It's like, I'm sure they'll work it out. It's fine.
We have 5 minutes for me to say one of my favorite episodes of all time is Chuck versus Phase 3. That's the episode where Chuck has been kidnapped. It's right after the Rob Riggle episode where, remember that episode? Where Chuck's blocked, his mom blocked the intersect where he can't access
right.
it. Yeah. Rob Riggle's
I love his death.
Yes. But the next episode where Chuck is in Thailand and Sarah is looking for him and she's like a total badass.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
She's the blonde she-male of Thailand.
Yeah. And she's like pit fighting with like Tom Poe from what's it called? Kickboxer or whatever.
Yeah. And it's got like a cobra in there and stuff. I thought that episode was awesome.
Yeah, I always loved it when they would go to these exotic locations and stuff like that. And it was supposed to be like the jungle. I mean, you could tell it was like a set or a back lot or whatever, but it was still so believable, you know?
Yeah,
and that's why I don't understand why this show couldn't be picked up on like the CW or on some other network, because it doesn't seem like, aside from paying the actors, it doesn't seem like there's a huge amount there, like of production that you really need. You know?
I would say the obvious place for Chuck to go would be Netflix.
Yeah,
since definitely. They already have all the episodes there.
Mm-hmm. Either that or Crackle. Like,
you know. No, not Crackle.
Anything but Crackle.
We could talk about more Chuck for hours.
Oh, yeah. We could be here for hours, definitely.
Thank you so much, Ross, for talking to me about Chuck.
Well, thank you for having me on. I really enjoyed this and appreciated it. And it's nice because it's nice to have your show, like your podcast, and to be able to come on and talk to you, because I feel very alone in my Chuckdom. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
because
that's the way I always felt.
I can imagine how you'd feel when you were watching it originally, but I'm just coming to it now and nobody's watching it. You know what I'm saying? It's just, it's you. So it's nice to be able to come on here and get all these thoughts out of my head and just talk some Chuck.
Absolutely. And thanks for taking the time to talk to me about it. Cause as you can tell, if I get worked up, I start just, talking about stuff about the show, you know.
Yeah, definitely. All right, man. Yeah, anytime. It's great. Keep up the amazing work on the show, and just know that when you're not getting feedback because people are unappreciative jerks, that at least I'm here enjoying every minute of it.
All right. As long as I know you and Adam Sexton are listening, I'm fine.
That's all you need. Exactly. All I need is Adam Sexton and Rob. Yeah. Be great.
And this paddle. I assume you were doing the jerk, so I was.
So yeah, exactly. Exactly. The poor attempt at the jerk. So, all right, Jason. I'll talk to you later. Keep up the good work.
All right, bye. Man.
Why are you letting Sam Kinison and an Indian lesbian wreck your wedding?
Now this is podcasting.